Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette. This is the next installment of our Just the Basics series.
Yeah, so today we're talking all about testosterone boosters, but I hear that boosters might be banned soon.
They very well might be, so we better talk about them and boost things up while we can. But in all seriousness, there's not really such a thing as a testosterone booster unless we're talking about test and D-ball and tren.
Those are androgen signaling boosters.
They make the test number
go
up.
Your testosterone.
Testosterone. Well, testosterone could decrease your testosterone if
you don't inject enough of
week.
It.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But in all seriousness, we are discussing some of the most popular questions, really. These podcasts tend to do well because people don't want to do the lifestyle things, which we talked about in our last podcast, which we can link. But they do want to take a pill for something. And some of these things do have niche use cases. And it is reasonable to optimize a lot of these things for your testosterone, but our goal is to explain this in layman's terms, just the basics. We will stop each other if things get too complicated, and we'll start with some of the most popular ones, like Tonkat.
That's right. So sit back and enjoy. If you didn't watch the last episode, you don't need to worry about lifestyle. For this episode, you don't have to lift a finger except to like, subscribe, and perhaps share with a friend. Number one, Tonkat Ali. This is undoubtedly the most popular testosterone-boosting supplement. So I guess we can kind of break this up into a couple of categories. We're talking about just, do they work? What do we think the mechanism is? And, you know, what have we seen clinically? So we'll kind of keep it short and sweet.
At a high-level view, for all supplements, not just Tonkat Ali, none of these work in 100% of patients reliably, no matter what.
Yeah, that's true. I think it would be fair to say that I have never seen any supplement reliably boost testosterone in every patient.
Mm-hmm. Tonkat is situationally useful, and it's very interesting because it seems to have multiple proposed mechanisms, mostly on the enzymes, which is basically converting a precursor hormone to a final hormone, and it affects quite a few things. We used to think that it's just an aromatase inhibitor because of rat studies, but it's more complicated. But at the end of the day, yes, in some people, Tonkat Ali does work. In general, it works on the patients that have adequate signaling from their brain to their gonads, both males and females, and testicles and ovaries, but they could use some more synthesis of this hormone. And there's some easier ways to know if you're a good candidate or not.
Yeah. So this one, if we're thinking about the area of the body it acts on, it doesn't seem to, at least in humans, be acting in the brain or the pituitary, but it just makes your testes produce a bit more testosterone. At the end of the day, I think that's the simplicity. And as far as the magnitude of the effect, it can be pretty modest to pretty significant, depending on the patient. I think the literature may cite up to a 200 nanogram per deciliter increase. I've seen higher and lower than that number. What about in your patient population? Are you seeing similar things?
Yeah. Some good takeaways is if someone has PCOS, they might not be a good candidate for Tonkat, and they probably wouldn't want to take it anyway, because it kind of does the same thing that some patients with PCOS have, but it also does that in cells like liver cells, not just the gonads. There's case reports of liver injury, and liver markers are certainly, we check for every patient that's on Tonkat. And in general, every patient that's trying to improve their testosterone levels many of these have potential hepatotoxic dose-dependent side effects, which means side effects where you get it more often at higher doses.
That's right. As we like to say, the dose makes the poison. Mm-hmm. Number two, boron. So I know you've spoken fairly extensively about the boron content of soil. I know you're an almond enthusiast. If they're grown in certain areas, they tend to have quite a bit of boron in them. But in general, what do we think about boron in terms of effect size, safety, which is a very important thing, and then a proposed mechanism?
Yeah, so boron is a nutrient, and you can have insufficient boron levels, and this would make it particularly useful if you eat a lot of dates or raisins or things from countries that do not have their boron levels as depleted in their soil, like Turkey or Greece, then you might not need boron as much. But in general, it's pretty benign. And it does have an effect on SHBG, which is the protein that binds all androgens like testosterone and all estrogens. But it's usually a pretty temporary effect if you just give it to the average person. So it doesn't necessarily hurt, but it's not going to move the needle by itself.
Yeah, it's not something I recommend in isolation, but for someone like, to your point, who has a higher sex hormone binding globulin or who perhaps wants to take more of a kitchen sink approach, if they tried a couple of things and were not seeing the results that they had hoped for. And the temporary effect is something I have noticed with this. It does seem to line up with about how long SHBG hangs around in the body, about 2 to 3 weeks. So it seems like there may be some adjustment back to homeostasis. So there are people who will kind of cycle on and cycle off this, which, you know, we would tend to recommend anyway with optimizing testosterone naturally.
Next is Fidogia agrestis. And this is very different than some other herbs in the Fidogia genus, which have significant safety concerns. But this is, again, something that has very niche clinical use cases and is really not something that the average person should be taking.
Yeah, I don't really recommend Fidogia, except perhaps as a last-ditch sort of kitchen sink approach for someone optimizing naturally. The main safety concern being testicular toxicity. We don't have any data on this in humans. It would be interesting, you know, to see if someone saw perhaps the easiest way to assess this would be a decrease or a decline in your semen parameters. Mm. If you were taking this and it in fact was causing a toxicity, but that won't fully capture the oxidative stress. So We do pair it with antioxidants if we ever do recommend it. And the dose is not that significant. I think about rat to human, mouse to human, I think it's about 200, 250 milligrams was the human equivalent dose.
Yeah.
We have a podcast people can look at if they want to know more granular detail. But
In general, certainly no more than about 2,000 milligrams per week. So that's 300 or less milligrams per day of Fidogia agrestis. And it's certainly something that you should get labs to check your various intracellular enzymes like GGT or your liver enzymes.
Yeah. Next, we have ashwagandha. So when you say ashwagandha, that can mean a lot of things because there's a lot of, I guess you could call them random ashwagandha extracts that are available over the counter. You have some that are sort of standardized to a certain percentage of stems and leaves and so forth that have been clinically studied. That's what I tend to recommend because I feel like we're going to have a more reliable effect there. Specifically, I'm referring to for testosterone for men, the KSM-66 ashwagandha, which I think has one, maybe two studies supporting testosterone improvement, but it does also have studies supporting improvements in semen parameters. So I sort of think of this as an adaptogen or a testicular antioxidant, if you will.
Yeah, and this is certainly something that is very polarizing. If you ask some people, they'll say, sarcasm detector, by the way.
Ding, ding.
Ashwagandha is just like an SSRI. It will permanently impair your sexual function and give you anhedonia, which is where you don't think anything's fun, and you should stop taking it immediately. And then the other group of, we'll say fitness influencers, non-scientific or pseudo-scientific fitness influencers, the ones that go to Google for all of their information, will say ashwagandha at any dose less than 900 milligrams per day. And if you don't use Shodin or Sensoril ashwagandha, it won't work. And you make sure it's standardized to withanolides, although the literature really isn't based on withanolides. It doesn't work. So end sarcasm there. Just the basics takeaway would be ashwagandha can be a potential, good use for patients that could have an antioxidant benefit. The other patient, that I think of for ashwagandha is someone with high cortisol, especially high around-the-clock cortisol, which is one of the stress hormones. It's kind of like prednisone. If people have taken prednisone before, cortisol is kind of the body's version of that. And if it's too high, then it certainly affects testosterone production, just like if you take prednisone for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. And to your point about the different subjective effects, you know, some people may feel better or worse taking ashwagandha, and you may have testosterone levels that are counter to that. For example, someone could say this made me feel a bit numbed out or like emotionally flat, but then their testosterone levels are up. Or someone may not see an improvement at all, but they feel like they're processing their stress better. So they're surprised to see that their testosterone didn't happen to improve. And when you mention oxidative stress, I think about people who have more oxidative stress. So people who have overweight or obesity would tend to benefit more because there's more of these sort of cytokines and oxidative stress processes happening in the production of testosterone that's sort of slowing the cellular machinery.
Certainly. I guess we can talk about vitamin D a bit. Is this the best or most underrated testosterone booster or testosterone vitamin?
Probably overrated for testosterone, underrated for myostatin,
general health purposes,
the general population. I think the numbers are actually getting better and better. But I think last I saw, maybe 70% of people are insufficient or worse. So more and more people are supplementing and checking their levels. Generally think that's a good thing. Spending time outside, getting sunlight.
Yep.
All these things that are going to make people feel better, but perhaps not through just testosterone. That being said, correcting a deficiency, it looks like in some studies, does lead to a small improvement in testosterone. I think about 50 points is the highest that I've seen.
Yeah, especially if your starting level is less than 10. That's when you're going to get the most profound effect. On mood as well. We've actually done a Just the Basics podcast on vitamin D as well. So please see that one for more information. But I do agree, of the things on this list, this is the most likely thing that the average listener should consider adding in to their supplement regimen, given that during the winter, so many people are insufficient. Next is Shilajit, which is kind of interesting. A couple different proposed mechanisms of action. It's not really a very specific pharmacodynamic supplement, but it does have some interesting data.
Yeah, this one actually has. So when I try to look at someone who says, hey, should I take this for testosterone? Someone sends me a supplement or a paper. I do look for things that have some human data to support that. Shilajit is one of those that has, I think, only one paper at this point in time. And it was ballpark 80, 100 nanogram per deciliter, if I remember correctly. So there does seem to be some data there. It's more of a multi-mineral, I think. I haven't seen this by itself reliably increase testosterone. I think of it more as a sort of brain health, multivitamin, multi-mineral. Mm. Maybe it reduces some inflammation. That's plausible. But wouldn't be my first go-to if I was strictly saying, hey, what can we do to optimize somebody's testosterone?
Agreed. It's more of a health supplement. So if someone's interested in taking polyphenols or antioxidants, or they don't have a diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables, then it is certainly very interesting. Next is Tribulus terrestris. And this is old school. If you went to GNC and got a test booster, there's for sure going to be Tribulus in it.
So since it's been around for such a long time, it must be proven to work, right?
When people take it, they do feel like it works because it works, but not for boosting testosterone. It, at least a lot of people think that it has significant libido effects, which if you're taking a Tribulus supplement, it's kind of hard at this point to parse out, is that, You know, would you still be having this effect if you were taking a placebo pill?
And you very well might be, given the quality of some supplements out there. But yeah, I've looked at this, and I think there was a meta-analysis, looked at like maybe 12 or 14 studies and found no consistent effect. I saw a recent study in CrossFitters, actually, that showed it. This was very confusing for me. Testosterone levels actually dropped in the tribulus group, dropped a little bit more in the control group, or placebo group.
Did the tribulus have SARMs in it?
But the authors concluded that it has a tendency to increase testosterone, even though the testosterone dropped by a few points, but it dropped less in the tribulus terrestris group, was their sort of claim to fame. People also added about 45 pounds to their bench press in this 6-week study. So take it for what you will.
Yeah. CrossFitters, interesting. A good study population, given that all of them are lifetime
did
naturals.
A bench press. Is that a CrossFit move?
Occasionally it is. Usually 50 pound dumbbell bench, flat bench, of course. Anyway. Not to rabbit trail on this, just the basics series. Next is something that's perhaps more related to Tongkat than anything else, Fenugreek, but perhaps not as promising.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It does have studies out there that show an increase in testosterone. The one that I pulled today, just to get a rough gauge of the numbers, showed you get a 40 something increase with fenugreek, and you get a 30 something point increase with the placebo. So it's really a marginal difference there. In theory, it should speed up some of those enzymes that lead to more testosterone production, but it probably has some overlap with the Tongkat Ali and not as much data, especially not as much human data.
Yeah. A takeaway that I could take is, the downside is you're taking a pill, and I think I've actually seen a couple of studies on fenugreek where it decreased testosterone. But if you're going to take it, you might as well take it with Tongkat to check all the enzymatic boxes. And then if you're going to take it with Tongkat, you almost might as well just take Tongkat. So if you have a side effect, you know which one it is. But that's fenugreek. Next is maca, which is the world's best sex hormone support supplement, right? Sarcasm detector.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, this is one that I've seen specifically cited as no hormone changes were seen, and there was still an aphrodisiac libido boosting effect in it. Mm-hmm. The doses are quite large. This is one I will recommend for patients, but not for testosterone boosting purposes, but for libido purposes.
Anything that boosts libido is always good. Anything that boosts DHT is always good. Anything that decreases prolactin is always good, and anything that decreases estrogen is always good.
Make that a Venn diagram.
Always good in the middle.
Yeah, but the doses are large. People will use a powder typically, unless you want to take a lot of capsules. Usually it's like 3 to 5 grams, something like that. It may have some like preclinical serotonergic effects. It's kind of a messy supplement, if you will, in terms of its mechanism of action.
Yeah, not a clear pharmacodynamic benefit, perhaps multiple mechanisms of action. That being said, it has been used for a very long time, I believe from Peru, not from Africa like Vidoja, not from, Asian medicine like Sustanchi we'll talk about later, and not from Ayurvedic medicine like ashwagandha. And a lot of people really like the subjective benefit, and there is many years of this anecdotal data. So I do have patients that take maca regularly and seem to have no downsides and have this great neurotransmitter benefit, if you will, perhaps serotonergic and libido increase, and they just feel much more at balance. And if you feel much more at balance, there is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and those patients do tend to do well on it. So I am certainly not anti-maca. Didn't want to make that the case, but I like things that have a very specific, well-known mechanism of action. I would put maca more between Zimbrin, which is Kana, and Saffron, kind of a mix between the two.
Yeah, more something you're going to feel, but maybe not objectively change hormone numbers on paper. Someone who listening, their head just exploded because you used serotonergic and improved libido in the same sentence.
It can happen. Yep, it certainly can. Look at Agi. Anyway, next is a bioidentical hormone. Hey, that's not fair to put on a test booster list. It's DHEA.
DHEA. So my opinion is this is probably the most likely to cause side effects of any supplement that's listed here. I guess some countries this is a drug, but here in the United States right now this is a supplement. And
you just need to combine it with pregnenolone and clomiphene, and there's zero side effects.
Yep. If you combine it with clomiphene or enclomiphene, it will increase testosterone, not the DHEA, but you will see an increase in testosterone generally. For men, there doesn't seem to be a significant effect most of the time, other than perhaps lowering lowering SHBG with the DHEA and some good candidates. Mm-hmm. For women, this can actually, I think the common example that's given is like if a woman is on an oral contraceptive with a synthetic estrogen, can help to sort of normalize that SHBG and keep a more reasonable level of free testosterone around, assuming that you are not trying to lower free testosterone for a therapeutic reason. But it's something that you can have, you know, acne, oily skin, nipple sensitivity.
Very common.
It seems to aromatize a lot in men.
I've seen adolescent males on very, very high doses of DHEA, hundreds of milligrams a day, and they've taken it for several months, and they develop pretty significant gynecomastia from DHEA.
Yeah, and I probably have the most concern in that population with DHEA because there's some preclinical data. It looks like it might speed up closure of the growth plates. Mm-hmm. So you get all the downsides of steroids, like stunting your growth, without any of the benefits.
Yes. That's a pretty good
summary. That's a bit of exaggeration, but
yeah. Yeah, in my clinical practice, I don't always recommend it to everyone. I'm not like, some people are pro-DHEA pregnenolone. Some people are very anti-DHEA pregnenolone. Think about your total balance of other androgens like testosterone and your estrogenicity and your estrogen sensitivity, and then choose a DHEA dose otherwise. So I'm okay with this being over-the-counter, but at a certain dose, it should certainly be physician-supervised. Next is ginger, which probably is really good for
sushi.
Preclinical data.
Preclinical data, right.
So rodents and biohackers.
Yeah.
That was also, ding, ding, sarcasm detector.
I do like ginger. Consuming ginger, it's a good nausea reliever. It's good for gastric motility. I haven't seen it raise testosterone. I have some patients that take fairly significant amounts of ginger just for digestive or health purposes.
Yep.
I haven't seen testosterone increases anecdotally there, but across the preclinical studies, the animal studies, like you said, these biohacking rodents, it looks great, especially if they're diabetic, especially if it's induced by streptozocin.
Yeah. Anyways, probably everything looks good in diabetic rodents, even water. But this should belong in a gut health series. I know that our sports dietitians, Diana and Adrian, helped us design a very reasonable gut cleanse, toxin cleanse protocol. And ginger or bitters in general, 5 to 10 minutes before your meal, is part of that protocol. Maybe we should do a Just the Basics podcast just on our gut and gut health cleanse and toxin cleanse.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think it would be fairly popular because there's a lot of good and bad information in the gut health sphere out there. Bulbine, likely not a great option. Mechanism is not well known. No human studies.
Yeah, I have seen some anecdotal reports of this, so it is interesting to me. But one of the downsides of bulbine compared to a lot of other things that have been used for quite some time in traditional medicine, if you will, is that this is not something that has been used very often. And we don't know if it could turn into another substantia, which looks slightly less promising as time goes on. I don't think the jury's out on that one. But I like things that have a known mechanism of action. And if they don't have a lot of clinical data, which is human data, I like it to have a very long history of traditional use and, you know, overwhelming anecdotal reports, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And that does bring us to Sustanci, which, as you mentioned earlier, has a background in Asian traditional medicine. I have here that it needs a Hirschberger assay, and it's the Punnett square of SARMs in rats. So can we break that down into the basics?
Yeah, those terms aren't very helpful in this podcast, but basically this Sustanci supplement, a lot of the studies come out of China, and I believe it is used in Chinese, or maybe it's general Southeast Asian traditional medicine. A Hirschberger assay is just measuring the basically how much testosterone is working or how much an androgen is working in the prostate tissue versus a muscle tissue that's levator ani, which for the purposes of this podcast, we don't need to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of a Hirschberger assay. But basically, you want to know how much does it work on your heart muscle? Hopefully not too much. How much does it work on your brain? Hopefully just enough in the right way. It's like the, it's just right.
Goldilocks. It's
Goldilocks and, yeah, and the bears.
The right zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you don't want it to work too much in the prostate, and you don't want it to work too much in the liver. So there's certain medications that are under study called SARM, selective androgen receptor modulators. If Sustanci is indeed a SARM, which means it activates the same receptor as testosterone in some tissues and inactivates the same receptor as testosterone in some tissues, it could be particularly good. We do know with, you know, reasonable assuredness that it inactivates the androgen receptor in several tissues, seemingly including the brain tissue, which makes the brain tissue detect less testosterone, which also makes the brain tissue make more signal called LH to go to your testicles to make more testosterone. So it does make the testosterone number go up. So of all the options here, it might make the testosterone number go up more than any of them. But we just don't know how many tissues it's going to be blocking the benefits in.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really nice breakdown. And if they, my one sentence takeaway here would be, personally, I'd be concerned about taking in something that is a sort of a mystery androgen blocker. I don't know where I'm blocking androgen signaling in my body.
It could be similar to spironolactone, which blocks androgen receptors. It could be similar to flutamide or various things that we give people with prostate cancer where we want to block all their androgen receptors. The Punnett square and rat thing and SARMs things, that just means you're designing the perfect medication or supplement to activate your androgen receptor a whole bunch in muscles because you just want bigger muscles, right? No matter what.
Yeah, I think a few of our original listeners will really appreciate that particular discussion. But I think we did a good job of sort of breaking it down in the main takeaway. And I actually may have to retract a statement here about DHEA. Horny goat weed, maybe I'll put this as a two-way tie for first for most side effects. Because this is one I think is one of the most contaminated supplements that you'll find, where it's being spiked with things like Clomid or spiked with Viagra when people are getting this at, you know, the gas station or wherever they're buying it. It's one that's frequently contaminated and sort of like taking a mystery pharmaceutical if we're talking about the uncertainty of what it might be doing.
Yeah. Of course, a horny supplement would be spiked. The benefit of it is if you take a supplement called horny goat weed, it might make you a little bit horny.
Yeah, the power of suggestion.
Yeah.
Realistically, there are some papers showing it might help with blood flow a little bit, but like we were discussing before we started rolling, this is commonly found in some test boosters and supplements as part of the formula.
The Viagra in it might help with blood flow.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's truly Viagra that's in there, and this has been found many, many times, then that may be the main mechanism of action, is that it's actually just Viagra.
Yeah. Good deal. I think that about covers it. As always, let us know which of this info you liked and didn't like. Let us know if we are still talking with too much unknown sarcasm or jargon, technical jargon and terms, and comment anywhere below.
Yep. As always, thank you for watching. May God bless you with health and happiness.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.